A happy feast day to all of you on this Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. We're very thankful for this day and for what it signifies for us that God himself, who took on flesh and dwelt among us, as we have been talking about through the course of this week, but it was very real, that which he submitted himself to as he went on the cross. And so there is a glory in which we take in even the Holy Cross, and that, as many of you probably know, there are relics of the true cross that exist that you can still venerate to this day. I don't know, do you have one here, Father? Not one here. That's one to pray for, to have a relic, because you have some beautiful relics here of different saints, but to have a relic of the true cross, and because it was real. And the cross is something real, and it's something that each one of us encounters in our lives. Sometimes every day, sometimes probably more than once a day, we encounter the cross. And while our lives do not stop with the cross, because Jesus, after he was taken down from the cross, we know that he was put in the tomb and he rose from the dead. But it was the involvement of the Blessed Mother who gave him that body, in order that it might be nailed to the cross. And it is she who I would like to talk about tonight, because as we began the mission, and as I found out that you all pray the Angelus before daily Mass, that beautiful prayer of the conversation between the Archangel Gabriel and the Blessed Virgin Mary, and that beautiful consent that she gave, "Be it done unto me according to thy word." That moment when the Word, the second person of the Blessed Trinity, became incarnate in the womb of the Blessed Mother. And so I'd like to share with you a quote from St. John Paul II in one of his many writings, because as you know, John Paul, he wrote a lot. And this is from Ecclesia de Eucharistia. And this was written towards the end of his pontificate. He says this about Our Lady: "Blessed is she who believed. Mary also anticipated in the mystery of the Incarnation the Church's Eucharistic faith, when at the Visitation she bore in her womb the Word made flesh. She became in some way a tabernacle, the first tabernacle in history, in which the Son of God, still invisible to our human gaze, allowed himself to be adored by Elizabeth, radiating his light, as it were, through the eyes and the voice of Mary. And is not the enraptured gaze of Mary, as she contemplated the face of the newborn Christ and cradled him in her arms, that unparalleled model of love which should inspire us every time we receive Eucharistic communion?" And so, Our Lady, all she ever wanted to do was to lead us to her Son. St. Louis de Montfort writes about it. Many of the great saints who are particularly devoted to Our Lady, they write about how Mary leads us to Jesus. And specifically with that the intimacy and that gaze between a mother and a son, in the case of Mary and Jesus, so too there is an intimacy in that exchange for us when we receive our Eucharistic Lord. And Mary really, though, is a model of faith, and in our individual lives, she wants to continue leading us back to Jesus. Because we know that in life, there are a lot of confusing things, a lot of our own weakness, our own human weakness that we encounter. There are a lot of mixed messages out in the world, and actually anti-Catholic and anti-Christian messages out in the world that do become loud noises in our ears. And so it's really important that we turn back to our Mother, who is going to lead us back to her Son. There have been in the world lately, and it just is, it's an increasing noise, but it's one that we can't avoid. It has to be talked about. Specifically with attacks on femininity and attacks on motherhood. because these attacks are very real and they continue to be very real and something that is, it's detrimental to our faith. And again, we want to ask Our Lady's intercession on our behalf that she pray for us, but we've got to think through it, sort through it, pray through it, and understand who it is we are as created male and female in the image and likeness of God, and then know how to respond to some folks who are very adamant about breaking down the distinctions between the masculine and the feminine, the male and the female, and those proper gender roles, if you will. I don't know when we could say the genesis, if you will, of the attack on motherhood and womanhood really began. Well, the Garden of Eden, obviously, you know, back with the serpent and that whole exchange, that very unfortunate day for Adam and Eve. That was the genesis of it. But maybe in our more modern times, maybe we could point to the late 19th or early 20th century. And I'm going to point to Marxism and the development of atheistic, materialistic communism. Some of the tenets of communism that became very popular, and by the way, these tenets of communism were condemned by Pope Pius XI in 1937 in the encyclical Divini Redemptoris. It's not exciting reading, but it's very good reading. Heavy on the philosophical principles, but it's good stuff because as in that time period, in the 30s, Archbishop Fulton Sheen was preaching and in some of his exchanges with prominent thinkers and communists in particular in New York City, a communist told Archbishop Sheen that the Catholic Church and Catholic thinkers understood communism better than communists understood communism. And so you see that in this document, Divini Redemptoris. And they break down the problems with the dialectic and all of the business with causing the class warfare and so forth. But one of the things in particular that the communists wanted to do was to get both parents working outside of the home. They wanted to get the woman out of the house. And they wanted to get her in the workforce. And now, there's nothing wrong with women working in the world. I was taught by many good teachers when I was in college, women who were great teachers. But it can be said that for the sake of family life, and really for the way that a woman is wired, she has a heart for nurturing. If God sends the family children, to nurture those children in the home and to really be the homemaker and kind of the defender of the home in a certain sense. And that role complements the role of the husband and the father, who is the leader and the protector and the provider. But mom provides, and the wife provides, a very stable place at home. And what the communists wanted to do was to get her out of the home and to get the children into public schools. And this is laid out in communist principles. And they could begin then teaching the children. So the children aren't learning from the parents so much as they are from state schools, which unfortunately is what we have, you know, going on today in the world, here in the United States. And it's really become it's at epic proportions of the struggles that we're having in terms of the confusion that has been presented and really forced upon kids at school and who then come home and their parents in some cases don't even have the rights and are being told they don't have the rights to help their child identify what gender they are. And so this kind of this tension that is in our culture today. And this has led to then another problem, I would say, then in the mid-1960s with the advent of the birth control pill on the scene. And it's interesting, in 1968, when St. Paul VI wrote Humanae Vitae and the document on the of human life and promoting the family life, but really talking about the problems, and he goes in paragraph 17, he talks about the consequences and the negative effects that will fall out if the birth control pill becomes used widely. And to keep in mind, St. Paul VI says this in 1968, and he says there's going to be four consequences. One, there will be a loss of respect for women in the society. Two, the man will stop taking responsibility for his actions with regards to women. Three, there will be a societal decline in morality. And four, we will begin to use our bodies like machines. Because he saw, and those who wrote the document saw, that when you separate the procreative from the unitive in the marital act, you separate the babies from the bonding, that there's going to be these negative consequences, these negative effects. Now, I won't go into a whole analysis of Humani Vitae, but it was prophetic what he said in 1968, over 50 years ago, that loss of respect for women because there's been an objectification of women. And then when we don't respect women, men don't respect themselves, there's nothing unique or distinct about marital intimacy and the sexual act, and it's just something that's purely pleasurable, then it becomes kind of a free-for-all to where we are today, where we are playing Mr. Potato Head with our bodies through gender reassignment surgeries. And who is particularly suffering from this, in my reading of it, women are being canceled. Women are being canceled at the end of the day. And I really wonder where the Gloria Steinems, and I had to look up a list of good feminists, who the modern feminists were, because Gloria Steinem was the only one who stuck out in my mind. Angela Davis, anyone read any Angela Davis? Yeah, me neither. Hillary Clinton, well, you've heard of her. Michelle Obama, Roxana Gay. Where are they? Why don't they care that at the University of Penn, there's a dude named Leah Thomas who's swimming and supposedly, he's competing against women, but he's supposedly won, he's won all these awards now because he's won first place because he's actually physically a man, biologically a man. And meanwhile, the media and leaders at prominent institutions and universities stand by and play a great game of the emperor's new clothes and say, oh, isn't it nice that this man or this transgender woman, Leah Thomas, has won all these awards? Well, of course. He developed for over 20 years as a man. The dude's got big shoulders. He's bigger than I am. And he's going to be able to swim harder and faster than a woman. I don't know if any of you have seen some of the replays of his, him winning races. And there are some people who are kind of clapping, but it's like there's nobody really clapping because some of his competitors are interviewed, they are saying, how unfair is this? They're asking that question and they're upset that the leaders at the university or within the NCAA aren't saying this is unfair, that there is actually a real biological difference between men and women. And so I am saddened for those who aren't able to, for the young women in particular who have practiced all their lives and trained all their lives, they're not going to be able to perform or to be able to win some of those awards and they're not even going to be able to really go on, and compete in other ways. And this is one example, one prominent example that does exist out there today in this cancellation of women. Maybe some of you have heard of the documentary by the political commentator Matt Walsh. And he's got a documentary that came out this last summer called What is a Woman? And if you want, and it's the subject matter is edgy, but it ends up, it's really a well-done documentary. The only place I can find it is at the Daily Wire, and I think you have to buy a subscription. But you can buy a month-long subscription, which is only 14 bucks. And so I know for college students, but maybe a couple of you could pool together 14 bucks, and then you could have a viewing of it somewhere and just watch it all together. Because it's well worth your time. Because Walsh goes and asks, again, leaders within academia, leaders within medicine, leaders within and therapists. He also asks people on the street. He wants to ask them one question. What is a woman? And he gets people on tape giving some of the craziest non-answers you'll ever hear. Now, especially with the academics and the people in the medical crowd, the pediatrician he interviews, the therapist, and the gender reassignment surgeon, they will not say what a woman is. Absolutely will not. Because they will not say that it is an adult female human who has female reproductive organs. They don't want to say that because they have so bought into, and they haven't just bought into it. They are actively promoting that destruction of a feminine identity, what an authentic female is. And it's something diabolical. Actually, the pediatrician that he interviews, I'm not so sure that she isn't involved in something occultic, because she's got this funky pendant on that she's wearing during the course of the interview. But these are leaders who are supposed to form minds of young people and who we're supposed to rely on, yet they are doing everything they can to break down that notion of femininity, that notion of what a woman authentically is. Now, some of the other folks he interviews, the student athletes, and one group in particular it's very interesting. He interviews, and I know I'm ruining this for you, spoiler alert, but it's still worth watching. He interviews some people from Kenya in the Maasai tribe. Now, these are folks who still live in mud huts, but they've had some civilization and they've had some exposure to the West. And when Mr. Walsh tries to explain this notion of transgenderism, the interpreter doesn't have a word to put it into context for the people of the Maasai tribe. And as he describes, or tries to describe, what transgenderism is, the men and the women all just start laughing, because it doesn't make any sense to them that if you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. And they understand that based on biology. And for us as Christians, as Catholics, it's a divinely instituted, divinely planned biology. Male and female, he created them. So this whole notion of this destruction and this cancellation of femininity, of womanhood, of motherhood, It's taking place in a post-Christian America. And it's going to be a challenge for us, really, to get back to where we were even 20 or 30 years ago. Because we've gone so far down this road. It's almost like where I grew up in Kansas, we had only dirt roads. We had paved roads. I mean, Interstate 70 was a paved road. But we've got out in the country just dirt roads, and when it would rain, you would get these nasty, muddy ruts in the roads. And then after they dried, they were really rough. And sometimes it would take it, you could eventually, the county road crews would come by with a big implement and fill the ruts with dirt, but they'd be ruts that were this deep. And if you can imagine driving down the road, you have to take your time, because if your car gets caught over in that rut, you know, it can be dangerous. So you have to drive very slowly as you're going down these county roads. We've got ruts, deep ruts, in our culture. And it's going to take some time to get those ruts worked out. And it's going to take a lot of intercession from Our Lady and a lot of prayer. Because where those folks in Kenya, the Maasai tribe, They have been blessed with the simplicity of their lives, but we have so technologized things to the exclusion, not the technology's not bad, but we have excluded God in the use of all that. And we haven't really asked the question, yes, we can do these kinds of reassignment surgeries or whatever, but should we? No one's asking those questions. And it's just, we continue on though. And I don't have a lot of numbers in terms of how prevalent all of this is, but it's in the news quite a lot. And just last week, some more news, there was some at a Boston Children's Hospital. They were talking about doing these reassignment surgeries, but you're not supposed to do them on someone who's younger than 18, but actually they were, and so they got in a little bit of trouble. Why are they pushing this? And again, I see it as this working at breaking down what's left of our Christian culture, what's left of our Christian family, and just the fundamental building block of society, which is a marriage between a man and a woman and children and family. And so, with those cheerful thoughts, we want to turn to Our Lady, and we look at her example of faith and obedience and humility, and her yes, and, you know, celebrating this feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross, thinking about the fact that Mary stood at the foot of the cross that whole time. Mel Gibson does a beautiful job of portraying Mary's involvement, especially with the last hours of Christ's life, as he makes his way up Calvary. And she's never far away. And she stands there with him until he dies, when he gives up his spirit. And she consented to that. She said yes to the Father again, as she gave over her Son to be crucified. And so, but what happens after that is that the Lord, he does go into the tomb and he does rise from the dead and he ascends to heaven, and Our Lady was assumed into heaven as well, and they are both in heaven. And Mary is there in heaven interceding on our behalf. And just as she was the first tabernacle on the earth, as St. John Paul II talked about, she is there in heaven now praising God and interceding for us. So, let us ask her to help us in a special way, that we might have a clearer vision of reality, that we might have a clearer vision of who God has made us to be as a man or as a woman in your particular vocation, and really to have faith that God is, he's going to aid you in that vocation, wherever he calls you or wherever he has called you, and whatever struggle, whatever sin might be there in your life, whether it as young or old, that as Jesus took on flesh, he came to recreate all of reality, to make it new, to make it whole again. And so as we carry on, as we come to Mass, as we receive the Eucharist, there is a recreation going on for us in that reception of the Eucharist, when we receive him in that state of grace, in that friendship with him. And this brings us great joy. This should bring us great peace. But Mary is, she's always there. She's not far away. She's leading us to him. And suffering, and the suffering we experience, it is hard. And it gets old. And sometimes it seems like it would be easier to throw aside the cross. But when we get to that point, that's when those little prayers that don't seem very fruitful, they don't feel very good, those are the good prayers. Those are the really good prayers. And those are the ones that the Lord, he sees you got an open heart and you're open to doing his will. And Our Lady wants to aid you in that. And so keep up that Marian devotion and foster that love of her as she leads you towards her Son. Praised be Jesus Christ, now and forever. Amen.